Chapter 32. I awoke to the sound of a beating drum. Funny, it was beating with the same rhythm as my heart, a pulsating beat that hurt. In fact, the top of my head felt as if it would explode. I tried to open my eyes, but that only increased the pain. Gary or Zach must have hit me on the head with something pretty hard. I lay very still until the pounding lessened. Then, when the noise of blood pulsating in my ears subsided, I could hear voices, Gary's and Zach's voices. Where was I? I cautiously wiggled my fingers and tried to move my feet. They were tied too. I seemed to be lying on something scratchy. I could feel it through my shirt and against my ankles where my jeans had ridden up. And then I smelled hay. I opened my eyes, just a slit, so that my captors wouldn't know that I had regained consciousness. The building where I lay was big and shadowy. It looked like a barn. Had they put me in one of Gary's barns? Was I still at the Worth Ranch? The two men sat on stools or kegs near a door. It was a tall, wide door, big enough for a tractor or trailer loaded with hay to get through. The door looked to be on tracks, and it was pushed back about 2 feet, wide enough to let in light, and with enough room for a person to squeeze through. "We'll get rid of her just like we did Andrea," Gary was saying. "I'm building a shed for old man McMurtry out on Old String Road. We'll put her under that cement. Nobody will know." Zach whacked something with the palm of his hand. "You and your stupid ideas. When she turns up missing, don't you think Grant Hindley is going to suspect she might be buried like Andrea was? Don't you imagine he suspects you, my good friend, and will search through Ventress County for any new building that's going on? What happened to our plan for making Jasper Harris look like he's the murderer? If we plant some evidence at his place, it'll look like he killed Darcy, and Andrea too." Gary sat silently for a few seconds and then muttered, "Don't get too big for your britches, Zach. You're in this as deep as I am. If you don't like my idea, you'd better come up with another one. We've got your cousin now, and we can't let her go. She knows too much, and she keeps poking into my business, says she's just writing a book. So we're going to have to get rid of her one way or another." "And you are dead set on staying here and pretending to be innocent of any crime?" Zach asked. "Your greed is going to get you into trouble, boss." "Look, Zach, you are being well paid for driving my truck from California to Oklahoma. Nobody knows I'm bringing in drugs to the dealers around here. Everybody thinks you're just bringing in building materials, so I think when you say I'm greedy, it's a case of the pot calling the kettle black. You didn't have to be a part of this. And now that I am, I can't get out. I hadn't planned on murder, Gary, and if you'd been more careful, Andrea would never have caught on about the drugs." "Oh, shut up. Point is, she did find out, and she said she was going to turn me in, so what else could I do? Then when I threatened her, she promised she wouldn't tell, but she said she wanted a divorce. Did you know that, Zach? If she had left, she would have taken all her wonderful money with her, and my wife was loaded with dough. I've got to admit, I've put it to good use. And I helped by letting you use my ATV to haul her away, didn't I? Seems to me like I'm the one doing all the helping and you're the one getting the wonderful money, as you called it." "Point is, Zach, you did help, and you are in this as deep as I am now." Zach snorted. "I'm going to go for my four-wheeler so we can get Darcy out of here the back way, like we did Andrea," Zach said. "When I get back, we can decide what to do with my nosy cousin." The two men left. The sound of their boots crunching through dry leaves grew fainter. Gary and Zach were into drugs, a lucrative and deadly business. I had learned a lot about this type of criminal when I was an investigative reporter. Most drug dealers don't have to worry about old age. They have short lives. These two men could have found no more detestable way to make money. A cold sweat broke out on my body. My stomach lurched, and I swallowed hard to keep from throwing up. They planned to kill me. Gary had a small criminal empire going, and they wouldn't let anybody stand in their way. Not Gary's wife, and certainly not me. My life had probably shortened considerably. I would live just until Zach came back with his ATV. I tried to pray, and a snatch of Psalm 91 came to my mind. For he shall give his angels charge over you. Please, Lord, I need your angels now, I whispered. Those ancient words gave me a measure of calm. My purse sat by the big front door. Gary and Zach had been lax in leaving it there, but then again, why not? I was trussed up like a Thanksgiving turkey, and they seemed pretty sure I'd still be in the same place waiting for them when they decided to return and end my life. Well, end it they might, but I was determined not to cooperate. Sometimes panic sharpens the senses, and mine were revved into high gear. I looked frantically around for a way out of my prison. A tall support beam, reaching from the floor into the dark loft of the barn, was a few feet away. I rolled over to it. Propping my back against the support, I pulled my feet under me and slowly pushed my way up. My legs wobbled and threatened to crumple under me. I took a few deep breaths. Now what? True, for a moment my feet were holding me up, but they were securely tied together. What should I do? Could I hop out the door and hop my way to freedom? But where would I hide? When Gary and Zach realized I was not in the barn, they would probably find me in no time. After all, I could not go very fast, and they would have Zach's ATV. Gary probably knew every hiding place on his ranch. Could I get my purse? And had they left my gun inside? There was only one way to find out. I pushed away from the beam and hopped toward my purse. Dropping down to my knees, I scooted around until I touched it as it lay behind me. I felt the clasp at the top, popped it open, and with the fingertips of both hands began rummaging through. The gun and cell phone were gone. Tears stung my eyes. Now what? Could I hide behind something in the barn and hope that Zach and Gary would not find me? As soon as the idea flashed into my mind, I realized I was grasping at straws. I would have a better chance out in the open. If I could make it to the thick woods, I just might be able to hide. With any luck, Gary was in the house and wouldn't look out his window to see me. How far was it to the Crowder home? I might have 30 minutes before Zach got back with his four-wheeler. How far could I hop in 30 minutes? Then again, Zach might be back in less time than that. My heart beat so fast that breathing hurt. Why had I been so careless as to get caught? The answer came immediately. Because I trusted Zach. When he said Gary would be out of town, I believed him. What a traitor. My fingers touched a bulge within the zipped-up pocket inside my purse. It wasn't the gun, nor the cell phone. I felt around its shape. It was a knife, Jackson Connor's knife. Zach and Gary either hadn't found it or hadn't thought it was important. After all, what could I do with my hands securely bound behind me? I was about to find out. I had often heard someone say, I could do that with my hands tied behind my back. I would be willing to bet they never tried unzipping a compartment inside a purse, fishing out a pocket knife, and trying to open the blade of said knife simply by feeling, and all the while shaking like a leaf. After dropping the knife into the bottom of my purse 3 times, I finally got a firm grip with my left hand. I could feel the indentation where 2 blades fit snugly inside the knife, but which was the long blade and which was the short? I settled on one, slid a fingernail into the groove on the blade, and tried to pry it open. It slipped out of my hands and fell. This time, it missed the purse and clunked against the wood floor. I blindly fished around until once again I had it in my fingers. At last, I held the knife with my right hand and popped open a blade. I slid the blade under the rope on my left wrist. I sawed back and forth, praying that the knives Gary Wirth had used as a promotional had good sharp blades. At last, the rope around my wrist snapped and dropped away. My shoulders ached, and the muscles in my arms felt as if they were going into a full-blown spasm, but my hands were free. I held them out in front of my face and wiggled my fingers. My left wrist had small bloody cuts, but that was okay. The important thing was my hands were free. Using my left hand, I removed the rope dangling from my right wrist and set to work on the ropes binding my ankles. When my feet were free, I felt like dancing. Instead, I used one of the old kegs by the door as support and pulled myself up. Hopefully, the feeling would soon return to my legs and arms. Surely, since I had come this far in my fight for freedom, I could slip through that barn door and run toward the road and safety. I had my hand on the door and was about to squeeze through when I heard the sound of a small motor. The noise grew louder. It was unmistakably the roar of an ATV. The motor stopped, and heavy footsteps swished through the fallen leaves toward the barn. Cousin Zach had returned.